work.
It doesn't work.
Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have just convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for June the 19th, 2017. We are gathered today for the purpose of a work session on House Bill 5012 relating to financial administration of the Housing and Community Services Department. Ms. Deister.
Okay, House Bill 5012, as you just mentioned, is the budget for HCSD. And this is the last actual budget bill that I might be bringing to you. So the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending a budget of $1,097,000,000. Hang on just one second here. $1,096,937,396. Total funds and 156 positions, 1.48.68 FTE for the Housing and Community Services Department for the 17-19 biennium. So what you need to know about this budget is that this recommendation took out decisions that will be made in capital construction with regard to items such as the LIFT program or bonds for housing preservation, and those are not included in this recommendation because those decisions will be made at a later date by another committee. Okay. The budget includes a number of adjustments, and we will walk through those in particular detail. I think the major points are a couple of adds to support the existing $40 million in LIFT money that was approved in the current biennium, the 15-17 biennium. These are administrative staffing positions, basically to get the dollars out the door, do the appropriate underwriting and oversight associated with that particular program. Two positions in the single family housing program that will perform analysis and product development to add to loan volume, and a position to meet additional sustained demand for the 4% low income housing tax credit program. We're continuing the homeownership stabilization initiative program, which is funded entirely by federal troubled asset relief program dollars, and there are some adjustments to federal funds expenditure limitation because of additional grants, one of which is the National Housing Trust Fund. And we'll talk about those, as I said, later. So you will also see the transfer of the Elderly Rental Assistance Program from the Department of Revenue to Housing and Community Services Department. There was legislation to do that was approved in 2015, so now we are moving the dollars over. There are some technical adjustments for the elimination of a long-term vacancy, and generally speaking, there are 6% reductions to a general fund to a number of the agency's general fund programs. So general fund support for the Oregon Commission on Voluntary Action and Service, and the Oregon Foreclosure Avoidance Program are not included in this recommendation due to general fund constraints, but discussions regarding Oregon volunteers are ongoing. So with that,
if I could stop and just make a general comment here, because I know that this matters to some folks both in the audience and at the committee. There was a considerable amount of conversation about the Oregon Foreclosure Avoidance Program, including what could be traded off to save that program even until February. And what it boiled down to was one of the most unpleasant Sophie's choices for the big co-chairs and co-chair Gomberg and me whether in order to save that program, you ate into the low-income rental assistance, elderly rental assistance, emergency housing, state homelessness assistance, the Housing Choice Landlord Guarantee, or CASA. And those were incredibly difficult choices to make. By all appearances, and I think Ms. Deister will cover this later, the foreclosure avoidance program, while still highly active and highly desirable, was seeing fewer folks. But I just wanted to tell you that that was not a decision that was made in an isolated or cavalier way. It was anguished over. So I just put that in context.
Okay. So I think I will walk you through the work session presentation report page by page. So page 1 of 20. Again, the LFO recommendation. Let's go ahead and start with actually page 2. For housing stabilization programs, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending general fund support of $11,740,127. Other funds expenditure limitation of $74,071,700. Federal funds expenditure limitation of $98,796,051. And non-limited federal funds of $121,165,609, 30 positions, 29.00 FTE. The first package in this particular program area is package 109. The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending approval. This provides federal funds expenditure limitation of $952,813 and one position, 0.5 FTE, and this is for additional dollars related to the Section 811 Project Rental Assistance Program. This is a five-year program that was begun in 15-17, and this is for administration of that program as well as the rent subsidy payments that go out as special payments to the landlords associated with that program. Package 110 is the transfer in of the Elderly Rental Assistance Program. You will see general fund recommended support of $1,410,000. This is, as previously mentioned, roughly 6% below the 17-19 current service level due to general fund constraints. You will see a corresponding other funds expenditure limitation of $1,410,000 as well. Basically, the general fund gets appropriated and it is spent by the department as other funds. So it's the same money, it's just the color slightly changes so that you can go slightly beyond June 30th if dollars are committed late in the biennium. So there's one position associated with this transfer, 0.5 FTE. Package 801 are the LFO analyst adjustments associated with housing stabilization programs. So what you see here are general fund reductions for each of the programs. And so that's the general fund adjustment down here. And then you also see an addition of $5 million in other funds expenditure limitation to reflect the passage of House Bill 2134. That bill has already been signed by the governor, and it enables the Public Utility Commission to collect an additional $5 million during the 17-19 biennium for electric bill payment assistance. This is something that has been done the past couple of biennia, and we're continuing it forward in 17-19. So the adjustments that you see here are the net of the two items.
Ms. Deister, just for clarity, I think you have a typo in the top line emergency housing account. You got a comma in a wrong place. Right.
Yep.
There. But what I want to make sure for people that are following this, either in the audience, these are, could you comment on the totality of
yes,
the programs?
I certainly can. So,
Co-Chair Gomberg, we are on page 5 of the detailed budget account.
Okay.
Thank you, Co-Chair, and I apologize for being late. This is the time of session when
everybody's required to be in more than one place at once.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, so the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation for each of the programs, I'm going to just read them off one by one. In total, the general fund support for the emergency housing account is $6,295,022. For the State Homeless Assistance Program, it's $3,220,654. There is no other funds corresponding expenditure limitation for the State Housing Account Program, but there is for most of the others. The general fund support recommended for the Low Income Rental Housing Fund is $514,913. And the general fund support recommended for the Housing Choice Landlord Guarantee Program is $299,538.
And just for absolute clarity, this recognizes a 6% cut across the entire programs, each one of them.
Correct.
Okay, and the $5 million that is now a result of House Bill 2134, that would then go to electric bill assistance only.
Right.
And I believe that that program is operated through the Community Action Association. Some of them are called teams. Some of them are called other things. But that's the portal by which that money travels.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Those entities aggregate a number of community assistance programs, and that is one of them. And, for example, the federal low-income heating assistance program is another, so they combine and leverage those dollars.
Now, in the last biennium, there was an additional boost to some of these. Has the decision yet been made? Would that appear in capital construction, or has the decision been made by leadership and the big co-chairs? What's going to happen with that?
I am not at liberty to know whether a final decision has been made about that, but additional opportunities do exist to augment support for any budget in the end of session.
My point being that that's conceivably still in the discussion phases. Okay.
Okay. Package 802 in the housing stabilization programs, I'm on page 6 of 20 right now. This package basically transfers two positions from the multifamily division to the housing stabilization division. The agency moved around some of their people when they were doing their budget build, and these were two that they inadvertently didn't move at that time and asked me to do this time. So you'll see a corresponding decrease to multifamily when we get to that program. It's nets to zero. It's basically a technical adjustment. Okay. For multifamily rental programs, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending general fund support of $561,182. Other fund support of other funds expenditure limitation of $75,610,369. Federal funds expenditure limitation of $20,641,563. Other funds non-limited of $1,850,000. 40 positions and 38.50 FTE. So package 101 is staff support for the local innovation and fast track housing program. Again, this is staff to support the $40 million of Article 11 Q bonds that were approved in 2015. So you'll see three positions associated with that, two FTE, and the loan specialist 3 position is supported with general fund, and that is limited duration. It's a 1.00 FTE position. There is a permanent program analyst 3 position funded with general fund at 0.5 FTE, and an other fund supported compliance specialist 3 position, 0.5 FTE. Again, that program has funding for those awards has already been announced. The positions are basically being phased in as they're needed and as those projects come online and awards are ready to be made. Package 102, this is a permanent loan specialist 3 position. which is recommended to manage additional transactions with a low-income housing tax credit 4% program. The demand for the program has been increasing, and the expenditure limitation associated with this is $217,417 other funds, one position, 1.00 FTE, and there's a small technical adjustment of $36 general fund associated with this package. Mm-hmm. We aim to be precise. Package 801 that's sort of the general number for LFO analyst adjustments, and this is additional federal funds expenditure limitation of $6 million federal funds for a new state allocation of $3 million per year for the National Housing Trust Fund. It's a new program that will complement existing federal, state, and local efforts for preservation and housing construction for extremely low-income families. So. Package 802 are those two positions I previously mentioned coming out of the multifamily rental housing program, the ones that moved into the housing stability program. For single-family housing programs, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends other funds expenditure limitation of $4,368,000, federal funds expenditure limitation of $721,221, seven positions and 6.50 FTE. Package 102 is a package to support two permanent positions in the single-family loan program. The purpose of these positions are to augment loan volume, basically looking for niche products that are not currently available, developing those, and offering those to individuals who qualify for the single-family loan program. They'll be conducting outreach, soliciting additional lending partners, and providing training to those lending partners as well. There's a loan specialist one position that is one of the two positions that's being recommended to process the increased transaction volume. So this is other funds expenditure limitation of $408,589. The Home Ownership Stabilization Initiative Program, other funds expenditure limitation is recommended for in the amount of $3,888,243 and 25 limited duration positions, 21.43 FTE. This is the program that is entirely funded by federal Troubled Asset Relief Program dollars from the U.S. Department of Treasury. The state of Oregon received $220 million for this program in a previous allocation. And in late 2015, we received an additional $95.4 million. And that second allocation came just as we were about ready to completely close out the program. So what you're seeing here is a ramp back up to be able to get those program payments out to folks who have been particularly affected and continue to be affected by recessionary forces, unemployment, et cetera. So a nonprofit entity was required to be created to deliver those program dollars. What you see here are just a portion of administrative expenses associated with it. The majority of the program consists of special payments directly to program qualifying program recipients, and those are off budget because they're particular expenditures of that not-for-profit entity. So,
Ms. Dyster, given that I think we were forced to create the not-for-profit,
yes,
in order to receive this magnificent amount of federal money,
correct,
have we had any difficulty getting accurate financial statements from the 501c3?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, actually, Housing and Community Services provides at least quarterly updates of that program information. It's www.oregonhomeownerhelp.org, and they've done it by, you know, region, maybe even by county, but I seem to remember regionally you can see who has qualified for what program, how program payments have gone out over time. It's a pretty good source of information, and, you know, it also has great background on the program and how it's come to be.
Is there any overlap in personalities, I mean, actual people, between Housing and Community Services and the 501c3?
The 501c3, again, these are limited duration positions.
Right.
And Housing and Community Services contracts with the 501c3 for some of the administrative requirements of the program. So you've got management type folks. I mean, these are, I would say yes. So these are employees that are on budget and limited duration positions. The thought is that once these dollars are spent out, I believe at the by December 2021, this program is going to wrap up and go away. Okay, for the Central Services Division, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending $2,703,632 general fund. Other funds expenditure limitation of $14,129,332. Federal funds expenditure limitation of $9,761,347. And 48 positions, 47.25 FTE. Package 102 provides for a permanent research analyst 2 position that's recommended for data needs and support for the development and execution of the state housing plan. This position is general fund supported, 1.00 FTE. It's a permanent position. You will recall that the recent Secretary of State audit recommended that the Housing and Community Services Department be more data-driven, and this position is helps to address that finding by regularly updating market conditions and the statewide affordable housing inventory.
I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the chair and ask the director to come up for just a second. I have a question about this housing plan. It seems to me frequently, Madam Director, as you take your seat, and when I get done talking, please introduce yourself. But it has seemed to me from time to time that we have pockets of housing activity in lots of places. There's a budget note in your budget talking about working with veterans. And I'm wondering to what degree this state housing plan would draw together everybody that's working on housing so that if someone dropped in here from Mars, they could actually see what are all of the initiatives, who are the portals of entry, who are the accountable agencies, whether they're community organizations or they're your department, other units of government. And is my assumption anywhere close to correct that this would be sort of the one-stop shop of what Oregon is doing in housing?
Thank you very much for the question, Co-Chair Johnson. For the record, my name is Margaret Salazar, and I'm Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. Thank you to the co-chairs, members of the committee, and Ms. Deister. And certainly, the short answer to your question is yes. As part of the statewide housing plan, one of the activities is to do an environmental scan, and that's sort of a fancy word for taking a look broadly at all the housing activities across the state of Oregon, including taking a broad look at the housing programs that are housed at other state agencies. And in fact, we have a tool at our disposal, which is a Secretary of State performance audit that was conducted a few years back that actually attempted to sort of create this map of existing housing and safety net programs throughout Oregon state government. So we're dusting that off, taking a look at that, and our plan is to engage our counterparts in other agencies to have a conversation about the best ways that we can make sure to leverage these various housing programs together across agencies so that we're working in tandem to serve Oregonians. That also includes doing sort of a map of community action agencies, housing developers, public housing authorities across the state so that we understand the work that's going on in various pockets, as you say, across the state. That is absolutely the intent.
That's very gratifying because my concern is that as all of us are touched in our own districts, regardless of what part of the state you're from, it used to be a more urban problem. I think now there are issues in Pendleton the same way they are in Astoria, the same way they are all over the place, is to try to figure out, we come in and we all want to do something, and we end up passing a bunch of disparate little programs. And to have all of those threads pulled together in one place so that not only can beneficiaries of these programs understand where they might go, but also developers could have some kind of a roadmap and know what the criteria were in order to access tax accommodations in one particular area versus another. So I'm heartened by this activity.
Absolutely. And certainly just wanted to note that we appreciate the support. And for us to be able to achieve that goal of really being a data-driven agency, that's why you see the requests here for additional staffing to really adequately staff our data and research division. We have lots of new tools like mapping of our various programs, but in order to be able to continue that work in an ongoing way to respond to the changing housing market, having that adequate staffing will be critical for us.
Thank you. If you don't mind, you can just stay there. There may be other questions.
Certainly. Okay. Package 801 is basically a package to reduce general fund support for the court-appointed special advocates program due to general fund constraints. So the recommendation provides for general fund support and corresponding other funds expenditure limitation in the following amounts to CASA for the 2017-19 biennium. $270,047 for administrative expenses and special payment support of $2,231,252.
And colleagues, just to fill you in a little bit on the ongoing discussions about CASA, there's been lots of debate this session about where CASA ought to live. There is no debate about how valuable the service is. And I think that there are a variety of people on both sides of the building interested in having them get some administrative support to help the organizations that are not flourishing, to have lessons learned from the ones that are, and to get some professional assistance to help strengthen the whole network, because all of these are organized as independent 501c3s as well. Some do very well, some not so much. So.
Question here. So I'm trying to figure out just exactly we have add on, you know, the two lines up under the package description, and then I see LFO recommendation. It looks like they're in brackets, which means I think it's a cut. So what, at the end of the day, what is it that we're doing to CASA?
Okay, at the end of the day, co-chairs and Senator Hansel, what you see in the brackets is just the adjustment from the current service level, which is how the Orbitz, you know, package is built, okay? So at the end of the day, the total amount of funding that is recommended for CASA for 17-19 in this recommendation is $270,047 for administrative funding and special payments that go out to the CASA network of $2,231,252.
And that's a reduction of 294,000?
It is a reduction of $147,420. Remember, in some of their programs, you have a corresponding other funds, but it's kind of counted as two different fund types, but it's only one adjustment amount, if that makes sense. So really, the reduction that you are seeing from a practical standpoint is a total reduction of $147,420. Okay. With regard to the Central Services Division, Package 812, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending the elimination of a vacant position, 1.00 FTE, and $208,972. Other funds expenditure limitation. This is basically an internal auditor position that has been vacant for over a biennium. In the immediate future, internal audit activities can be performed by the Department of Administrative Services under contract because they just had that Secretary of State audit. A lot of the functions that this position would otherwise do from a practical standpoint been performed for them. To the extent that they would like to return in 1921 as they're building their budget and request this position back when they have a work plan associated with it, that is something that can be considered at that time. And then lastly, you have the Bond Activities and Debt Service Division. The recommendation associated with this division, there are no packages, but the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending $6,426,262 general fund, $16,007,282 lottery funds. Both of those amounts are for debt service. Other funds expenditure limitation of $4,496,095. Non-limited other funds of $629,999,381, and six positions, 6.00 FTE for the 17-19 biennium.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions of Ms. Deister? Senator Hanson.
Well, I'm going to trust the co-chair's decision on this, but I just cost this very near and dear to my heart, and that's just, I hate to see that kind of cut. So, but I'm willing to trust you guys' deliberations.
Well, I think for all of us, not only are many of us in our private lives donors, but we also are fundraisers. And I think lots of budgets are getting little haircuts. We've minimized the haircut here, but I think in the long run, if we can get a place for CASA and expertise to come in, will end up strengthening all of the CASAs in their ability to solicit private donations, to manage to the state's budget. And I think when we have that deeper set of accountabilities, that it may motivate the legislature to make greater investments in what all of us value as an incredibly important service to the courts, to the litigants, but especially to the kids. Co-Chair Grunberg.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I don't want to leave you standing alone on that. I just want to echo all of your comments. CASA's got some of my private money as well, and we are determined to find the right place for them to go forward and to thrive in that future.
Okay. Representative Meek, then Representative Rudin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted to point out, I submitted some written statements in regards to my thoughts on the loss of the OFA program. And I'm disappointed because, just for example, right now, I don't want to read this to everybody, you can read it, but I want to point out that OFA, you know, currently administered through Springfield, Salem, and my district through NEDCO. Just this last biennium, they served over 452 clients across Clackamas County. And it's, to me, if this program goes away, a lot of these folks are not going to have anywhere to turn to. And as a realtor and somebody that's helped people deal with foreclosures and short sales during the recession, I know that these programs are very valuable in helping them to get the services they need. Otherwise, unfortunately, we all know that there are there's websites that folks can go to that don't necessarily help them out, and they just end up being in a worse situation. And I just feel this would be a great opportunity to help serve them. I know the heartfelt work the co-chairs did on this, and I appreciate that. But I don't know where else our families can turn to without a program like that.
If I could respond on a personal level, my husband is the chair of the board of our community action team. Believe me, we were motivated to try to fix this, and I got to sleep sometime. And the Sophie's choice was, as I enumerated at the beginning of the committee, you just don't know where to go get it. The demand on general fund this budget cycle is so extreme. But my suggestion would be that as we near the end of the session, speaking with the co-chairs, I mean, there are always opportunities for adjustments in the final bills that come through, but we could not save the program. We looked at all sorts of different numerical solutions. We would have had to have taken about $1.5 million out of these other programs to keep it operating until February. And in consultation with community action teams and others, coming after EHA or the SHAP was just not an alternative. But I would visit with your co-chair.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Not this one, the important one.
Pardon me?
This is Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I'd just like to second Representative Meek. Foreclosure prevention counseling is really critical. Two of the three most biggest counties in terms of using this program are counties that I represent, Clackamas County and Multnomah County. And some of us like to look at the fact that unemployment rates are down and supposedly the economy is booming, but there's still an awful lot of people that are in danger of losing their homes, and these foreclosure programs are very helpful. So I would just urge you, as we get to the final bill and so on, that if there is a little additional money, that this would certainly be a good place to backfill.
Thank you. Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oops, I forgot Representative Reardon.
Go ahead.
Different topic, but thank you.
Can we stick with this topic?
That'd be great.
Okay, Representative Nierman.
I'll get in line behind Representative.
Okay. Right. Representative Reardon.
So maybe this is something I should know, but what happens, when the agency was last in here, there was they presented on the day that the feds announced they might be cutting 100 and some million, and it's been kind of stressing me ever since I heard that. So do we have what happens if we have a change in federal support?
Let's hear from the director. Madam Director.
Thank you very much, co-chairs and committee members, Representative Reardon. I, too, have had trouble sleeping since the federal budget numbers came out. We don't have much more detailed information at this point. We're all watching the fiscal year 18 federal budget conversations as they're just now beginning to unfold in Congress. We have now the President's budget proposal, but we do not yet have any of the budgets passed out of appropriations committees. Okay. Your recollection is correct that at our last discussion we mentioned cuts totaling approximately $111 million over the course of the biennium on a range of programs from homeless services to housing development programs and rental assistance. That would potentially impact Oregonians in an immediate fashion, especially for folks that are relying on tenant assistance. I wish I had more detail to provide to you. I think we're all carefully watching this situation and are prepared to work with our local partners to think about how the state funds interplay with those federal funds and how to best maximize the resources that are available.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Nierman.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I have a few things. So first of all, just in the interest of transparency, I serve on the board of directors for Oregon CASA Network. So, and I'm disappointed to see the cuts, but I'm grateful for the work that was done on that, for what you were able to fund on that. When I look at this, I know the agency's had some trouble in the past, and I appreciate there's new leadership now, and I want to be encouraging to that. When I look at kind of a big amalgam of the tremendous need that there is for housing, and the dollar amounts that I see in front of me, and the amount of units that are created or supported or whatever, and it seems like the need's still not being met. And I don't know, I guess, and that's not necessarily entirely a function of the agency or anything like that, but I just wonder, I have some kind of big picture things about delivery of services, about you know, it's the same thing with healthcare, that there doesn't seem to be a cinder block alternative for delivery of services where you get something minimal when you get welfare, and I see that a little bit in housing too. So that makes me just wonder about that. So I'll just wonder out loud about that, and that's what I have to say.
Thank you. Any comments?
Thank you very much, Representative and co-chairs, and certainly the comments around the cost of delivering housing. It's something we take very seriously at OHCS, and we're always looking at how we're delivering services, the best way to maximize the dollars, and the best way to ensure that the interventions that we're using are having a lasting effect and impact on the individuals and the families that are receiving our assistance. So we've done some soul searching. We've also done some number crunching, and so a couple things I wanted to share. Certainly the cost per unit of housing delivery can provide some sticker shock, and one of the reasons why is because through our KPM process and other processes, if we compare the cost of affordable housing development to market rate housing development, it's a hard comparison to make because they're not an apples to apples comparison. So for those of you that are involved in real estate, you know that if you're building market rate housing, some of the cost is borne by the rents, and the rents can match market, and you can potentially raise rents to cover your development costs. On the affordable housing side, because we have restricted rents, we just don't have that opportunity. A couple of the other things that are pushing against that cost are, you know, for us, we take very seriously the need to try to meet the needs of folks in high opportunity areas where there's proximity to jobs, decent schools, transit availability, or for seniors in particular, things like services and healthcare. And those can be expensive locations to site housing, so that can actually boost the cost. And about 40% of our recent developments have been in those high opportunity areas, which unfortunately pushes up on that cost number. We also serve extremely low-income individuals through our housing, which means the housing can be more expensive per unit because you have to cover the costs of covering those rents. So this is not an effort to make any sort of excuses or anything like that for the cost. It's more to just explain what we're up against. I think one of the things we're trying to do through our statewide housing plan is to get really strategic about how we're working together with our friends at the Oregon Health Authority, DHS, and other partners to try to infuse services into our housing and think about permanent solutions like supportive housing that can help get folks into stable housing situations. So we'll continue to look at kind of the bang for the buck, and also, again, that stability of the folks that we're serving over the long haul. And we appreciate the comments.
Good. There's a lot of opportunities for improvement.
Yeah,
so
for sure. Take it.
As you ticked off those high opportunity areas, close to transit, close to hospitals, close to work, I couldn't help but think of parts of my district, and certainly Senator Hansel's, where there is no transit, there is no hospital, there are jobs, but they're dispersed over a wide territory. Don't forget about us.
Absolutely.
We may not fit the high opportunity criteria, but we sure have the high need.
Absolutely. So. Thank you so much. And I should have mentioned, Senator Johnson, that in addition to those drivers that can raise the costs, certainly building in smaller communities can also be more expensive in some ways because you have less labor availability, and you also have a higher per unit cost if you're building smaller projects. So these are all things we're attuned to, and certainly appreciate the point that we need to look at rural and smaller communities as well.
I would yearn for recommendations from your agency that could be implemented by the legislature to bring down some of that cost under the general heading of regulatory burden. If there are a set of ideas without compromising life safety, does it have to have the granite countertop? Could it have formica? And that's an extreme example, but I can't help but close my eyes and think about that workforce housing in Boardman. And if there are any suggestions that you can make in terms of land acquisition, in terms of structural design? Could you have template housing? So while that might not please the architects, each one of whom wants to have a signature facility, if you had a template and could replicate that template over and over again, would that bring down the costs? Just your thoughts, because you're on the front line of providing this housing, you would know better than any of the rest of us how welcome that kind of recommendation would be.
Co-chair, thank you for the comments, and I will take the opportunity to say that we've been looking carefully at the land acquisition program, which is a proposal that I know legislators are considering this session. The idea behind that program is to get ahead of the escalating land costs by purchasing land early, hopefully before we see the sort of inflationary pressures on land costs, to allow local nonprofit or housing authority partners to get the land in their portfolio and start putting together their housing transactions. And we think that could have an overall effect and impact on helping to lower the overall development cost of housing, because you're paying that lower cost for land. So that's one idea that we're looking carefully at, as well as not only preserving existing affordable housing, but helping to acquire existing housing that may be naturally occurring as affordable housing and bringing that into our portfolio as an affordable opportunity. So these are some of the things in the hopper that we're looking at through the statewide housing plan, and we'll be glad to continue speaking with you about those.
I would certainly reach out to your sister agency, ODOT, because in one of the multiple iterations of the transportation package was a mandate for ODOT to divest itself of surplus property. Now, in some cases, that may be a little vestigial piece at a corner that you couldn't build a doghouse on, much less apartments. But if there is excess property in their portfolio that might meet the criteria of at least being close to a major arterial, that might be a source of more economical land acquisition.
Thank you for the comments. We will certainly speak with our friends at ODOT about that.
Cool. Representative Reardon.
Actually, Co-Chair. We passed a bill, I think it was last session, that makes information about ODOT's excess property, makes it available to the nonprofits first. Mm-hmm. And so they have that opportunity to act.
So, great. Yeah. All right. Any other questions of Ms. Deister with respect to the budget presentation? Okay, prior to starting to take motions, Madam Director, just as a courtesy to you, I know your fiscal staff have worked with LFO, but I would invite you to use this opportunity to make any comments about the budget, given that you've heard the committee's concerns about certain aspects of it. If there's anything you'd like to add to the record before we start doing motions, I would welcome those comments.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair. I just wanted to note, I know that the committee members are wrestling with some of the potential reductions to general fund programs. We've done a little bit of work on our end to understand the potential impact. And so just to share, for the EHA program, which is proposed at a 6% reduction to general fund, we estimate a reduction of about 1,400 households that would be served through the biennium. For the SHAP program, a potential reduction of just over 2,000 households that would be served.
I want to make sure that the committee understands, because I don't. Are these 1,400 households in EHA that would not be served, or are these the remainder that will be?
That would not be served. That would be the reduction number.
Okay.
Thank you for the clarification. So potentially 1,487 individuals that would be reduced over the biennium. For SHAP, a reduction in 2,092 households reduced over the biennium. For the low-income rental housing fund, a reduction of 10 households served. Those are some of the things that we're focusing on. I know there's also been a conversation about the OFA program, and we estimate that the proposal would reduce the number served by 3,478 households. So those are just some of the impacts. We'd be glad to put that in writing for the committee so that you have those numbers in front of you as you make these challenging decisions. I would just want to also note our thanks and appreciation for Ms. Deister and her very constructive engagement with our agency throughout this process. Really appreciate the open lines of communication, and also want to thank the committee for the consideration as well of our agency's capacity challenges. As you know, we've received a number of new programs over the last few years and have not had the ability to staff up accordingly to appropriately deliver those programs. So we appreciate the recognition from the committee of our needs to be able to take on some of the opportunities that we've been discussing here today about how to best deliver our programs. And I think with adequate staffing, we can certainly engage in some of those dialogues.
Have you scoured internally as well? I think many of us have been distressed by recent articles in the print media talking about the amount of money that some agencies are spending on agency promotion, lobbying in the building, PR people. I don't know how lean your organization is with respect to those kinds of activities, but if they could help buy back reductions in those arenas, could help buy back families served, absolutely, all of us would be eager to hear that.
Yes. Co-chair, I appreciate the comments, and certainly we are of the same mind that we wake up every morning thinking about the folks that are in danger of living on the street or perishing on the street. So I believe we run a very lean and mean agency. I think our CFO would agree with that.
Yeah, Caleb Yant, Chief Financial Officer. Thank you, Co-Chair, for the question and comment. I think the one thing that I'll say is we appreciate the positions that are supported by general fund as part of the LFO recommendation. We have very few general fund positions in our agency, so I think that's one item of note there. I think the other piece, and not that this shouldn't be an ongoing process for us to continue to look at this, but as we went through the transition process a few years back where we received 1 year of budget, we took a pretty hard look at our staffing model and delivery mechanisms to ensure that they're best aligned with the need and how we deliver the programs that we're in charge to deliver for. So it's not that it shouldn't be an ongoing item that we will look at, and I think we need to, but those are, I think, some relevant comments.
Thank you. All right, one last comment from me before we start taking motions. I remember when you weren't here, a 1 year or half the biennial budget. Huge improvement, and you, Madam Director, are like a breath of fresh air coming through that agency. You have inspired confidence in the legislature and earning back the trust and credibility of the agency. Despite some of the effects that these budget cuts will have on your agency, I think many of us have huge confidence in your ability to continue to steer the agency in the right direction.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
All right, colleagues. Mr. Co-Chair. Oops, did I cut you off?
No.
Okay, Mr. Co-Chair.
Well, thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. I've been quiet because I wanted to give the other committee members an opportunity to comment on this, particularly since you and I have had more than a few conversations about the housing budget. I wanted to thank Ms. Salazar. I wanted to thank Ms. and her entire team. I wanted to thank Ms. Deister for her diligent work here. I don't think there's any question in anybody's mind that we're facing serious housing challenges in Oregon. I think of my own district where 25% of the kids in our schools are categorized as homeless, 60% of my seniors are challenged by the cost of housing, and a lot of our small businesses are struggling because the people that they hoped would come to work for them can't find a place to live nearby. So this budget is not what we hoped it would be. And I'm not going to be supporting it with great pleasure or any pleasure at all. But the sad fact is, in this kind of fiscal environment, that you write budgets with the money you've got, not with the money you wish you had.
Yep.
So we need to move forward today. And I would just simply say the session's not over. It'll be over soon, but it's not over yet. And there's still some opportunities to address some of the shortfalls that we are going to be approving in the next few minutes. But let me begin that process by moving approval of the LFO recommendations on 5012.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Any questions, any discussion, any objection? So ordered.
With regard to performance measures, let me take a minute to orient you to the table. The Housing and Community Services Department at the legislature's instigation has gone and taken a hard look at key performance measures going into the 17-19 biennium. So what you will see is a number of proposed new key performance measures. The ones that are remaining are 1, 7, and 9 at the top. A number of new key performance measures are proposed, several of which replace existing key performance measures, which are delineated at the bottom of that matrix, as you can see there. So the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending the key performance measures as presented in that matrix, the new ones, and then those that are proposed for deletion. Also, I want to point out, with regard to key performance measure number 5, you'll recall there was discussion here in the subcommittee about trying to differentiate between the cost per square foot of newly constructed housing versus the cost per square foot for rehabilitated housing or housing preservation, and reporting on both basically in a differentiated way. So the targets for these measures in terms of a way proposed to do that is basically to compare against RS means data, which is taken from a national construction database for each of those two. So it's difficult to set targets now. It's basically a backward-looking measure so that you can see how they're doing, how they did in an actual year compared to the RS means database. So that's what this recommendation sort of encompasses.
Good. Thank you.
If I could.
Representative Noble.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Just a question. Instead of a dollar amount, was there any consideration given to a percentage of that RS means, looking back 95% of it, or trying to something that we could compare to year after year as opposed to just a raw number?
Co-Chairs, Representative Noble, actually, no, frankly. To the extent that that might be something that is appropriate, we could certainly, you know, obviously you're going to see how far you come, and that is going to show you how close or how far away you are. But it could certainly be expressed as a percentage with, you know, 100% being a perfect match. You know, the higher it is, the further off that you are.
Or 98% being a perfect match.
Right. So, yeah, certainly that's something that we can possibly finesse a little bit so that the target doesn't look like to be determined and expresses itself a little more eloquently for the purposes of the report.
If we approve these, though, they're locked in stone, are they not?
Madam Co-Chair, the subcommittee makes a recommendation to full, so to the extent that I can get this finessed by the time this budget gets out of the full committee, I think that we would be okay if there is a desire to do that on the part of the subcommittee.
Cool. Colleagues, just by general acknowledgement of Representative Noble's suggestion on the KPMs, any objection to him working with Ms. Deister? Okay. Mm-hmm. Finesse away.
All right. Okay, then.
Questions?
Are
we getting ready to vote or something?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Let me have a question, please.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Kutcher. So could somebody explain to me, please, the percentages on and how these work? Because it's not very clear. Item number four, affordable rental housing for people with disabilities. Does that 12% indicate of the total population of people with disabilities, we hope to help 12% of those, or I don't know what that means.
I am going to go ahead and defer if it's okay with our subcommittee co-chairs to the agency, because the specifics matter. I don't believe it's the specifics matter, and I'd like
Madam Director.
Yeah, absolutely. Co-chair, representative, this, in that particular one, that is the percentage of units, total units that we fund compared to the percentage of units funded for that specific population. So 12% of the units that we fund will be targeted to that population. And in that case, that 12% for how that target was set is compared to that special population to the overall population of Oregon. And so that's how we arrived at that target. So we're saying if 12% of the population in Oregon is meeting that definition for housing with people with disabilities, then at least that percentage of our units will be built to target that population.
Okay. Thank you.
Question. How does that differ from the one that we're eliminating, number three?
Co-chair, Senator, it really specifies what it is. So the prior KPM had increased housing for special needs individuals. It had some very broad characterizations that were hard to define the specific population we were trying to serve, and so it was hard to measure against that because it was difficult to say, you know, how do you qualify for that specific. So it really is kind of reworking the prior KPM just so there's a greater definition around it.
Follow-up?
Yeah, so if 12, so you chose 12% because 12% of the population is special needs generally?
Yeah, with I'd have to look at the exact verbiage there, but yeah, we in the notes underneath this we define exactly how we calculate that, and yes, that is compared to the overall population of Oregon.
Well,
so then 12% of every. At least 12% of everything built will have that, whatever the special needs differential is for that unit?
It will be targeting that clientele. And so it will be set aside for people with disabilities.
And Senator, if I may, I believe it's 12% of the overall production, not each project.
Correct.
Is that responsive?
Well, I guess the only question I would have, are we doing this based upon need or by some metric that may or may not have anything to do with what the actual marketplace and the needs are?
We appreciate the question, Senator, and I think that's part of what we are trying to get at through our statewide housing plan is to really better understand the need for persons with disabilities. So it may be that after we do additional data analysis, we may want to come back and revisit this KPM. But for now, the best we can do, not having had the benefit of completing our planning effort, is to at least know that we're meeting the overall population percentage of the population, a percentage of what we're doing. It may be that we go back to the drawing board and say we need to do more for this community, but we haven't had those conversations as of yet.
Follow up. Currently, what percentage of those that are in affordable housing would be classified as special needs?
I would have to go back and look at our information, but I venture to guess that it's significant. But we'd have to go back and take a look at our data.
How broadly do you define special needs? Would this be physical limitations or mental health or?
Co-chair, I believe that the definition that we are proposing is both mental and physical disabilities. And again, what we're trying to do this year is to better define special needs, because where we have gotten stuck in prior years is that we had not a lot of definition around that terminology, and that got very confusing for ourselves and for our stakeholders around what we meant by special needs. So I believe there's additional specificity in the definition that we're proposing this time around.
Representative Reardon.
Thank you. I want to take one more stab at this. And I think I've understood the answer so far if we have 12% disabled and we have a big budget, we're spending 12% that matches the population that we're trying to serve. What I've always had a hard time understanding is of the overall needs for housing, the really big number out there, How are we doing against that number? Because here we're just talking about whatever amount of money we have, we'll spend it and we'll dice and slice it a certain way to meet different populations. But I have no clue, except I think we're doing really poorly, how we're meeting needs for housing across the state. Does anybody have that number?
Representative and co-chairs, nationally, the estimate is that we, as housing providers, are meeting the need for about 1 in 4 folks in need of affordable housing.
Okay.
That's a national benchmark. And we do have detail that has broken this down from the National Low Income Housing Coalition and other national kind of research bodies that show approximately the state of Oregon, it's around 23 available and affordable units for every 100 households that are seeking affordable housing. Those are some benchmarks. They're not perfect, but it gives us a sense that we're basically meeting about a quarter of the need out there.
Thank you, I think.
Okay. Other questions about the KPMs before we go to motions? All right. Co-Chair Gumberg.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I would move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures with the finessing that that was committed to on House Bill on Senate Bill? House Bill.
House
on,
Bill.
On House Bill 5012.
Thank you, colleagues. You've heard the motion. Any questions, any discussion, any objection? Complete with finessing, so ordered. All right.
Okay, so there is a proposed budget note for the Housing and Community Services Department for this budget. And I will just go ahead and read it into the record as quickly as I may. The Housing and Community Services Department and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs are directed to work in concert to develop a plan to advise the legislature on strategic investments of federal, state, including Measure 96 lottery dollars, and local funds for veterans' homelessness and housing issues that will result in long-term housing stability for veterans. The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and the Housing and Community Services Department will report back to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means in February 2018 with a proposal that includes a key performance measure to quantify progress toward this goal. The report shall include, but need not be limited to, the following: information on best practices and programs in other states that have shown efficacy, the amount and source of resources intended to be utilized for each option presented, other partners or cooperation necessary from state or local entities, the number of veterans that can be assisted with each proposal at the suggested level of support, and necessary changes to statute to implement the plan.
Okay. Colleagues, any questions of Ms. Deister? Mr. Co-Chair.
Co-Chair Johnson, I move the LFO recommendation on budget notes.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Any questions, any discussion, any objection? So ordered.
Okay. So we're in the home stretch. The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending a budget of $21,431,203 general fund, $16,007,282 lottery funds, $176,573,739 other funds expenditure limitation, $129,920,182 federal funds expenditure limitation, $631,849,381 other funds non-limited, $121,165,609 federal funds non-limited, and 156 positions, 148.68 FTE, which is reflected in the Dash 1 amendment.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Co-Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 5012.
Co-Chair Gumberg has moved the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 5012. Any questions, any discussion, any objection? So ordered. Co-Chair Gumberg.
Finally, Co-Chair, I would move the I would move House Bill 5012 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you have heard the motion. Any questions? Any question?
I'm sorry, comments.
Comment. Representative Noble.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I want to thank, one, I appreciate the budget note connected to last week's vote on the veterans budget very much. Thank you, co-chairs. And I want to thank Director Salazar. I think that you're probably not done herding cats yet. Being brand new and being thrown right into the budget process probably is a similar feeling that myself joining the legislature this year. But just as a broad picture, and I know you know this because we've discussed it, housing and food are basic to everyone. And without that, your education budget, public safety budgets, they really don't mean as much. With that said, it's a reaction to today, so education is still important with changing the future. I'm concerned with 28 additional FTE. I'm concerned with reductions in CASA and EHA and SHAP. I'm concerned that we didn't have a chance to actually get the housing analysis done before we plan and do a strategic plan on what our future looks like with addressing the analysis that we don't have completed. And I know that's probably, you feel that more than I do. You're in the middle of that, and I just want to acknowledge that. So I very much appreciate where we're headed. I'm still not sure that I'm a yes on this budget right now, just because I have some concerns. But please don't take that as a vote of, please know that you have my vote of confidence. And as you continue to herd those cats and look for efficiencies and ways to deal with the issues we have, you have my support.
Thank you for your comments.
Okay, any other questions? Any objections? Representative Nierman and Representative Noble reserving the right to change his mind as we move through the finessement and other issues.
Yes.
All right, so ordered. We now need carriers for House Bill 5012 as amended. It moves. Oh, we need the last motion.
No,
we did the last motion. So we need carriers as it moves to full. On the Senate side, Senator Monroe volunteers to full and to the Senate floor.
Okay.
Representative Reardon.
And Representative Reardon to the House. All right, colleagues, thank you very much for your patience. Ms. Deister, I know this was a tough budget for you. I want to publicly acknowledge your professionalism and patience as we move through it. Anything else for the good of the order?
Committee members, let's see. I believe that you have got a fairly robust schedule this week. So I know that I believe that Oregon Business Development Department you may be seeing this week. So watch your emails and watch OLIS postings for when those materials will be available to you. And there will be a number of policy bills coming your way as well. So,
Madam Co-Chair, that robust schedule may be challenged by the floors by the House's floor schedule as well. So we'll do our very best to move forward through that.
Thank you very much. And I have a question of Eric. When do we get our clock back, Eric?
I hope it'll be back tomorrow.
Thank you, sir. I glanced up there a half a dozen times and was shocked to see it not there. All right, colleagues, anything for the committee's benefit? They're seeing that we're adjourned.
When we're meeting next.